or judges this morning, please. I hope I'm not wearying you by keeping you so long in the opening chapters of Judges after taking so long to get there. But the more I glance over this and read it and meditate on it, the more it seems to be filled with so many practical lessons that can be of real help to us in our life,
that I feel we shouldn't pass them over, but we should at least notice the most outstanding ones. So I ask you again to read with me in Judges chapter 2, and we will read from verse 6 of that chapter, and I'd like to continue through the fourth verse of the third chapter. Judges 2 and verse 6 through chapter 3 and verse 4. And will you please share with me in the reading of this, taking alternate verses. Judges chapter 2 and beginning at verse 6. Now, I'm pausing because almost invariably I read the odd verses and you read the even verses. But just so we won't get mixed up and I'll read the wrong one, I'll start at the fifth verse. Then it'll just be the same as with our usual reading. And they called the name of that place Bochim, and they sacrificed there unto the Lord. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. And they buried him in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the mount of Ephraim, on the north side of the hill Gaash. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and served Balaam. And they forsook the Lord, and served Baal and Ashtaroth. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. And yet they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a-whoring after other gods, bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of the Lord, but they did not do so. It came to pass when the judge was dead, that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers, in following other gods to serve them, and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings, nor from their stubborn ways. I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died. Therefore, the Lord left those nations without driving them out hastily. Neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. Only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. May the Lord add his blessing, the reading of his precious word. Now, I've already pointed out that these opening chapters of this book of Judges give us two things. They give us a link with what has gone before, as Joshua led the children of Israel into the promised land. They were able to conquer that land through the overthrowing of their enemies, and then to divide it amongst the various tribes. That's the one thing that we have brought before us in these opening chapters. Another is a sort of synopsis of all that is to follow in this book of Judges. The failure of the children of Israel to fully lay hold on what was their God-given inheritance, and the reason for that failure, and yet the fact that when they repented, and when they cried to God, God in his grace and forbearance raised up a deliverer, judges as they're called here, and through them granted them deliverance. And they enjoyed rest for a while from the oppression of these other nations. So that's brought before us in these opening chapters in somewhat of a synoptic manner. Then we go into detail. And in the will of the Lord, when I return, we shall begin to look at the experiences of Israel under these various judges that God raised up. Each one of them was different. And there are many practical lessons for us to learn in that. But I want you particularly this morning to note with me what I just mentioned in closing last Sunday morning, that in those opening verses of our reading this morning, when we have referenced back to Joshua and those who were associated with him, we have this fact that as long as Joshua, the God-given leader, the man of God, as long as he was present with his strong influence on the nation for God, that they obeyed God and they served him. You remember that Joshua, in some of his closing words, revealed the strength of character that was in him when he put before them their need of choosing whom they would serve. But then he said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua was not one of those men that was swayed by popular opinion. He didn't allow himself to be caught in the current of his day. If that current happened to be going contrary to his belief, then Joshua took his stand right in the midst of that current and remained as unshakable as a rock. Oh, how that spirit is necessary. How many have made shipwreck of their Christian life and testimony simply because they couldn't go against the current. Simply because they couldn't stand when others were bowing to Baal. But Joshua, as I said, was not that type of a man. As for me, he made his own choice. And my house, whatever the rest of you do, we will serve the Lord. Joshua knew the right thing to do was to obey and to serve God. And he was going to do that. And in these days when we're more influenced and affected by what it's diplomatic to do, and what might possibly be to our advantage, materially and otherwise, it's good every now and then just to meet someone, like Joshua, who makes their choice, makes it under the guidance of God, and takes their stand there. And as Luther said long ago, I can do no other. Here I stand, so help me God. Well, that was Joshua. And as a result, his influence for God and for good was felt by the entire nation. And he had associated with him elders of the same stamp as himself. So that even when he passed away, the elders that remained amongst Israel, they also exerted an influence for good on the nation. And we were reading that Israel served the Lord during these elders. And then it comes on a little farther. It says in verse 10, also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. These were the ones who had personal dealings with God, who had been influenced by and for God. And during their life, there was a going on for God. But now that tragic note, it's sad to say we must get accustomed to in studying this book of Judges, because it's characteristic. It says in the middle of verse 10 of chapter 2, and there arose another generation after them which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. Reminding us again what the Bible teaches from cover to cover, that salvation and godliness does not run in the blood. These men had had godly forebears, but that didn't make that generation godly. It's a great heritage to come of a strong Christian line. I'm fully convinced that just looking at ourselves right now, we who are parents, I believe by our life and our testimony, our faithfulness to God, I believe we can not only bring blessing to our immediate family now, but I believe it's possible for us to sow, as it were, blessing for generations to come. That, I think, is the clear teaching of the Word of God. And conversely, if we fail, if we do not stand for God, if we take the way of the world and not the way of God, we will not only reap the sad consequences, our family likewise, but our posterity may as well. No man liveth to himself, no man dieth to himself. So it's well for us in considering these things in connection with our life, our actions, our decisions. And so a generation arises that knows not God. They knew not the Lord. It's a great thing if your grandfather, your grandmother, if your grandparents, a great thing if they were people of God. If they knew the Lord, that's grand. Even better, so far as you're concerned, the influence on you is grand if your parents were those who knew the Lord. But even if they were, there's no assurance that you know the Lord. This isn't something you inherit. The influence may be there. But every generation, as well as every individual, has to come to know the Lord in a personal way. There's no such a thing as handing down salvation to your parents, to your children. You pray for them. You teach them. You live before them, but they must personally come to know the Lord. And so, there's always that subtle danger there of taking for granted, because our parents were godly Christians, that somehow or other we're saved too. Oh no. No, no. That's not in the Bible. Except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. And every individual in each generation must personally come to a saving knowledge
of the Lord Jesus Christ. Here's a generation that arises in Israel. Now, they're nominal Israelites. They are under the covenant that was given to Israel. And they share in the covenant blessings, but they don't know the Lord. And as a result, they are not personally saved. The result is inevitable. You have it in verse 11. And the children of Israel did evil. Yes? Where you have those who do not know the Lord, they're going to do evil. And this is what brought such chaos into the nation of Israel and brought the departures with all the attendant discipline upon that nation by God. It all stems back to the fact that these ones did not know the Lord. They did not know the work that he had done. Therefore, their choice was for evil. Their delight was in evil. And that influenced and affected the entire nation. I like to say this. The testimony of God on earth has experienced that all through its history. There are places this morning that are reeking with modernistic denial of the truth of God that were founded by godly men. There are denominations today that owe their origin to men of God and to the preaching of the truth of God. But I'm quite sure if those same men were to rise from their dead, they wouldn't be received in the pulpits of the denominations that were founded by them. The truth of God has been denied. The Bible has been cast out. The hymns that speak of the precious blood of Christ have been deleted from the hymnal. And so on. And yet trace back, and you'll find that these were begun by men of God. Some of the greatest universities in our land that today are hotbeds of denial of the truth of God, that ridicule the faith of our fathers, those universities were founded by godly ministers. And the money that built the original buildings was money from Christians. That is true case after case of name universities in our country. And there, when you get right down a little more specific, there are places where the truth of God has been preached and practiced, where there was a holding fast to the things of God, and then things began to be watered down a little. Just this little bit, truth was let slip, and that was let go, another was let go. Another generation comes on the scene, holds fast to some of the truth, but let some of the rest of it go. What I'm concerned about is that each generation take the torch of truth and hold it high in blessing to their generation. What I trust and pray for continually is that this testimony here may produce, shall I say, its crop of young people, young men and women, who will in due time become the backbone of this assembly. Ones who carry on and give color to this entire assembly. I trust and pray that generations will be raised up of young people who will stand true to the truth of God. It's our responsibility at the present time to ensure that as much as we can. And every one of us that's a Christian here has that responsibility. How can we do it? We can do it, first of all, by being true to the truth ourselves. What we know to be the truth of God, let's not only believe it, let's practice it. Let's stand for it. We can assist in this, too, those of us who are parents, in teaching it in our homes and living it in our homes. We who may be Sunday school teachers can ensure it by teaching. The boys and the girls and the young people. Thank God for every one of them. Teaching them the truth of God until that truth becomes part of their life. And I trust that this little work
will continue till the Lord comes, true to the truth of God. I would be much happier, although I won't be around at the time, I would much happier to know that if the Lord be not come 50 years from now, this assembly were approximately its same size and still choose the truth of God, than for it to number 2,000 and be away from God. Numbers mean nothing unless those numbers are on the right side. God grant the testimony may grow and thus be a blessing to many more, both young and old, saved and unsaved. That's not my thought, as I'm sure you understand. But the thing is this, size will never compensate for the lack of spirituality. And so, the children of Israel did evil. Notice, they did evil in the sight of the Lord. Not according to the standards of their day, because everybody around them was doing what they started to do. But it was evil in the sight of the Lord. And if you and I, who are Christians, are going to live for the glory of God, we've got to forget about the standards around. So far as I'm concerned, the standards of today mean just nothing unless those standards are right. There's only one standard that I know of, that's in the book. And if other standards are out of keeping with this book, then they're wrong. They're wrong. And a Christian shouldn't have too much difficulty in making their decision as to what standard they're going to go by. If you go by the book, it'll be there for all eternity. They did evil in the sight of the Lord. Yes, what they were doing was wrong before God. The other nations applauded them, no doubt. They said, you know, Israel's beginning to wake up. They got over a lot of these old-fashioned ideas of theirs, talking about their Jehovah God and having no visible representation of him. Why, at last they're catching up with us. You know, they've got some images around. They've got some images of Baal and of Ashtaroth around. They begin to catch up with us. Remind me of the old minister preaching the gospel, the truth of God. A young lad just out of modernistic cemetery said to him, Dad, he said, you're 50 years behind the time. You're never going to catch up. And the old brother looked at him and said, son, I'm not going to catch up because I'm not going your way. Yes. We who are going by the truth of God are not trying to catch up with those who departed from it. We're going another direction altogether. And Israel, while they may have been applauded by the nations around, they were doing evil in the sight of the Lord. After all, he's the one before whom he must stand. Those eyes that are as a flame of fire that are going to pierce through everything. It'd be nice to know when you stand before him that you've done not what was evil in the sight of the Lord, but that which was right. So they forsake God. And forsaking God is not only a serious thing, it's a dangerous thing. Oh, I know people today have cast off the fear of God. But the Bible still speaks about the fear of the Lord as being the beginning of wisdom. And some people are never going to get wise. They're never going to get wise, no matter how long they live, because they haven't learned the first lesson, the fear of the Lord. But you find in verse 14, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. None of us like people to get angry against us. But you have to make a choice. It's much better for men to be angry with you than for God. The anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. And he delivered them into the hands of spoilers that spoiled them. Isn't that tragic? God was the God of their nation. And this book begins with them delivering them out of the hand of the nation. Here, because of their sins, he delivers them into the hand of their enemies. Wouldn't it be terrible if you felt that because of your sin and departure from God, God was going to hand you over to your enemies? Think of that. your spiritual enemies, the world, the flesh, the devil. Think of what a terrible thing if God were to say, well, they're going to have to learn it the hard way, apparently. So we just let them learn the consequences of their actions. And after you've been knocking around in this old world as long as I have, you've seen a good many who have had to pay for their departure from God. Whenever I see anyone getting away from God, I always begin to tremble for them. I begin to pray for them because I know they've got a hard row ahead of them. Eventually, they will pay. And even stranger, it says that he sold them into the hand of their enemies round about. Think of God selling you. Just letting your enemies have their way. And as a result, they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Oh, may that speak to all of our hearts. And if we know the Lord, if we've been saved by His grace, if we belong to Him, there's no happier place than being close to the Lord. And there's no safer place. Close to Him, where you know His preserving, protecting care. Ah, yes, if you're under the shadow of His wings, living communion with Him, you'll not be exempt from trial. No, no. I can't promise you for a moment that you'll be without trial or difficulty. But I can promise you this. You'll have a God with you that'll be greater than any trial you go through. And as it were, He keep His hand under your chin. You'll not find the waters overflowing you. The fires may be very hot, but they're not going to kindle on you. His promise is sure. And so, God had for their own good, their ultimate good, that they might be restored to Him and returned to Him, God had to hand them over and thus use their very enemies as instruments of blessing under God's overruling for their national as well as individual good. But God tells us in these verses why He did not drive out these nations before. Now, we were noticing last Sunday morning, He didn't drive them out because they didn't do it themselves. God said, I'll be with you. I'll give you the victory. You go ahead and drive them out. And they wouldn't do it. And God said, well, I'm not going to do it for you. And He didn't. Now, that's one side of His reason. The other side is this, that He left them, we're reading in the first verse of chapter 3, He left these nations that they might prove Israel. Prove them in what way? Well, as it continues on, whether they would obey God. You see, you never know until there's a test applied. And I believe the real test of reality in a Christian, or professing Christian, is what they do when they can make the choice themselves. I've seen many a young person, as long as they're at home, in that godly home, sheltered, cared for, the environment conducive to living for God, and then they've gone away. I always like to watch a young person when they get away from the family home, out of the nest, where they choose now. 200 miles away, where they choose. That is the indication of reality or the lack of it. Do you remember that the apostles, when they got out of prison where they were for preaching the gospel, as soon as they got loose, what does it say? It said they went to their own company. They went to their own company. And a Christian, who they are, young or old, a Christian loves to be with those who are living for the Lord. But now suppose everyone were a Christian. You'd never have your reality tested, would you? I've been to many Bible conferences in my life. Have a wonderful time. 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 Christians.
and everything's of God. You get up in the morning and everyone you meet, you know they're born again Christian. You walk down the halls with them, or sit down in the breakfast room or whatever it may be, and you don't have to try to start a conversation about the Lord, because if you don't, whoever you're sitting beside will. Why? Because they're Christians. Now, we regret that due to circumstances beyond our control, we're going to have to ask you to vacate the auditorium just as quickly and as quietly as possible. May I say this? Will these two, from here, right, will you please use that? From here, will you kindly use that? And please allow these ones at the front to go first. Now, it's not easy for undue haste, but we appreciate it if you'll move along. And kindly go right across to the school grounds. Kindly cross.